On Tech News Today, Apple reports record profits, revenue, and growth. Wall Street is disappointed. Plus, we've got new details on Google Glass, and Nokia's back. This time, they're getting into virtual reality. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is ZDNet contributing writer Kevin Toefel. Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
I am doing well, much better than the tech stocks are doing today, I can tell you that.
Yeah, they're taking a beating, and we're going to be talking a little bit about why that might be the case. We just have a late-breaking story here from Mark Berger. We're not going to talk too much about it because it just came out, but it looks like the European Union, according to the Financial Times, is going after Google again for yet another thing. This one's around advertising. And so we'll probably report on that on Tech News tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific and also on tomorrow's Tech News Today. In the meantime, Kevin, why don't we jump right into the regular news because we got plenty of it today. Apple beat expectations in their earnings call yesterday, reporting $10.7 billion in profit, not revenue, for the quarter on revenue of nearly $50 billion, which is a 33% increase over the same quarter last year. Of course, Wall Street was disappointed. Shara Tipkin is a senior writer for CNET and joins us now. Welcome to you, Shara.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, Apple beat expectations, reported truckloads and truckloads of money going into Cupertino. Why did their stock drop something like 8% after the call?
Yeah. I mean, Apple is different. Every company, every investor looks at them differently from anybody else in the tech world. So something that would be amazing for any other company is disappointing for Apple. The biggest concern this time around was iPhone sales. So they sold, 47.5 million of them, but it was about 2 million short of what analysts had expected.
Shara, China is definitely becoming a big part of Apple's revenue stream, and I know they grew iPhone sales there again and will probably continue to do so. But do you think that investors are concerned about the economy in China, which has been kind of shaky lately, or they're just thinking it's peak iPhone in China at this point?
Oh, definitely. I mean, people are for sure concerned about China. It has, in the last quarter, it became Apple's biggest iPhone market. Tim Cook says they still see it becoming Apple's biggest market overall. But even he said that there could be some speed bumps in the short term because of what's happening there with the stock market and the general economy. He said that the fears are probably overstated, I think is the phrase he used. But, we just have to see what happens there. If there's a major slowdown in the economy, that means people aren't going to have, $800 to spend on a new iPhone. So it's definitely a big concern for the company.
To a certain extent, I understand the disappointment. I mean, sarcasm aside, Apple has the highest valuation of any company ever, I think, or at least they did yesterday.
They've made a bigger profit than any company ever.
Yeah. And to have a valuation that high that's driven by, excitement or interest or whatever you want to call it by the stock market, basically. And that has to be earned quarter after quarter. And in order to earn that, you have to really be a high performing company. And a lot of the, of course, the iPhone is the big driver of revenue and profit for the company. Huge percentage of their money comes in from the iPhone. And yet the iPhone was, they got a big jolt from the big iPhones they came out with. For the first time ever, Apple had a big iPhone. They also got a big jolt from a recent deal that they've been trying to land with China Mobile for a couple of years. And so for a while, they've been on China Mobile. And that's unlikely to be the new normal. On the other hand, they are building Apple stores in China as fast as they possibly can and spreading across the country. Unless the Chinese economy craters or something, they're going to keep making more people middle class and essentially bringing them into the realm of people who can afford an iPhone. So what do you personally think, Shara, about Apple's prospects in China over the next year, over the next couple of years? Are you optimistic?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I actually just got back from Vietnam, which, you know, it's the population there is not as big as China, but it is kind of developing like China was, you know, maybe 10 years ago. And everybody in Vietnam is just crazy about the iPhone. You can't even walk, you know, go down a single block without seeing a store that is advertising the iPhone and other Apple products. And I think that Apple just has this huge brand behind them. You know, unless they completely just come out with crappy phones over the next couple of years, which I doubt is the case, I think they're going to keep growing in China. There's, as you mentioned, the middle class is growing there, and what people are wanting to put their money into is new phones, and they really care about that Apple brand.
So, Shara, let's talk about some of their other products, even though the iPhone is like 70% of the company's revenue, if not more at this point. You know, everybody wanted to know that this is the first time that Apple will be reporting a full quarter and will have Apple Watch sales under its belt. Tim Cook had previously said last year, we're not going to share those actual sales figures because we don't want our competitors to know. And of course, people are extrapolating that to iPhone sales are, Apple Watch sales are bad. So what did we find out, if anything, because they lumped those sales into the other products category?
Yeah, this was really tricky. And it was funny, I was watching Twitter during the call, and there were all these analysts that were kind of debating amongst each other what the numbers were. One analyst, Gene Munster from Piper Jaffray, he came out with a note right after the release came out saying, oh, clearly the numbers indicate that they sold 1.2 million Apple Watches. During the call, Tim Cook and the CFO tried to talk about how all of the growth, sequential growth in the other products category, which was just shy of $1 billion, they said all of that came from Apple Watch. So people are trying to draw conclusions about what that means. After the call, Piper Jaffray revised it and said, oh, we think they sold 2.5 million. Some of the other forecasts were around the same. But any way you look at it, it was still not as many Apple Watches as people had expected. I think most analysts were around 4 million or something like that. And while we don't actually know the precise number, generally Wall Street analysts are saying it wasn't as much as we had thought. We've kind of seen them across the board cut their expectations for what Apple's going to sell for the Apple Watch in the next couple quarters. But Tim Cook, you know, he's always optimistic. He said that they expect this to be the top gift for the holiday season. So we're just going to have to see if people are buying this as a stocking stuffer. I think we're past the point of really giving smartphones as gifts because everybody has one. So, you know, if you're trying to get a gift for somebody, a tech product, and you don't really know what to get them, maybe you're going to buy an Apple Watch, maybe you'll buy a Fitbit, one of these other wearables. So that's really what Apple's counting on.
One thing I'm not buying is Tim Cook's claim during the call that the Apple Watch sales have met or exceeded their Apple's expectations.
Yeah, I mean, we have no idea what that is. Yeah, you know, I mean, they could have been like, oh, I think we're going to sell 50 of these things. Great. You know, there's no, you know, I hate when companies give comparisons like that, because all you hear is, oh, they beat expectations, but they don't give a number. And they say it's because they don't want to give competitors an unfair advantage. But what about the iPad or the iPhone? Like, why were they not worried about giving rivals an advantage with those products? I was looking back at the iPad last night when that first came out, and they had 4 press releases in the first 3 months giving updates on how many of those they'd sold. And, you know, right, the iPad changed that market, and we've seen a million different tablets come out since then. I don't know how giving numbers can really give someone else a competitive advantage.
I'm shocked, Shara. shocked that you would suggest that Apple would spin their sales numbers here. Now, what about, you mentioned the iPad. How is the iPad doing? Is it still sliding into?
It's still doing so bad. I don't think anybody expected it to recover this quarter. The last iPads they introduced were in October, so we're almost getting up to be those being a year old. The new ones weren't really a change from the last ones anyway. So what we're really looking for now is the sort of iPad Pro, which could let you do a lot more business things with it, bigger screen, you know, kind of just hopes that something like that could help get this going again. But the fact is, if you have an iPhone 6 Plus, that is a big screen. You know, getting an iPad mini is not really something that you need. So it's just, you know, the market is kind of going through growing pains. I don't think it's going to die completely, but it's definitely not a booming place for Apple right now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because that refresh cycle of an iPad or a tablet in general is just not the same as, say, the iPhone, for example. Mm-hmm. Neither is that for the PC. People keep their PCs for so long. And that brings me to the last question here about their last product line, and that's the Mac. The PC industry has actually really been struggling as a whole for the past several quarters, and it looks like Apple, you know, did it again. They grew Mac sales, I think, by 8%.
Yeah.
I mean, is that... Hmm?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say, it's really kind of remarkable what they've been able to do with the Mac product line. For a long time, it was kind of just the other products almost. People weren't really excited about Macs. Everybody's talking about iPad, iPhone, all these other products. And there was the worry that people weren't going to buy computers anymore, that everybody's going to buy tablets. And you can just look at Apple's results and see that that's not the case. Like, their Mac line has really been doing well over the past couple quarters, especially when you compare it to the rest of the market. They just came out with the new MacBook earlier this spring that's super thin, super light, has a gold color. And I've seen a lot of those in the wild already. So I think that what they're doing is what people are looking for in a computer.
I'm actually using that one right now for this show, which was a struggle because it only has one port and I've got two USB devices here. So pull in the hub.
Woohoo.
First world problem. Shara Tipkin is at CNET.com and on Twitter at Shara Tipkin. Shara, I want to thank you so much for coming on Tech News today.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right. More news coming right up. But first, let's talk about our sponsor. The show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. You know, the only thing that matters when you're hiring people is hiring the best person. It makes all the difference for your success, either as a department, as a manager, for your career, for your small business. You have to hire the right person. And ZipRecruiter helps you hire the best person. And one of the ways that they do that is they help prevent hiring burnout. If you've hired people before, you know that it's an exhausting process that takes enormous amounts of time and effort by lots of people. You have to bring people in and you have to interview them. And then after you've interviewed them, you realize they're not the right person and you've wasted half your day, you know, doing this kind of thing. And at some point, I've seen so many managers essentially give up and settle for somebody who isn't quite right for the position simply because they are absolutely exhausted. ZipRecruiter will help you prevent that hiring burnout by enabling you to go out to 100 plus job boards with a single click. That's the first part. Reaching people is really, really fast and easy. And secondly, when those candidates come back in, they'll separate the best qualified from the unqualified so that you can just focus on the people who are qualified. They'll also help you attract the best person because you'll be able to have your own branding. It's very professional looking, and you don't have to do any work or spend any time to make it look great. They'll even help you reach out to candidates on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google+. They've been used by more than 400,000 businesses, and there's a very good reason for that. And you can try it now for free. You can actually make that first hire for free. We've got a user testimonial named Janet. Her name is Janet, and she's a happy ZipRecruiter client. She said, quote, "I was looking for two positions at my marketing agency. Received 100-plus resumes in a month and found that most of the resumes to be spot on and well-matched to our request. We filled the jobs and would like to use ZipRecruiter again. We would use ZipRecruiter again without hesitation." And you hear that a lot from ZipRecruiter customers. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. New details about the upcoming Enterprise edition of Google Glass have been uncovered by 9to5 Google's Stephen Hall, who joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks. I don't think I've seen you since Google I.O. What are your sources telling you about features and attributes of the Google Glass Enterprise Edition? You've got some new information. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so the latest information is that this thing is definitely being built with the Glass at Work startups in mind, which are 10 partners who are all building software specifically for Glass in the workplace, in the medical field, and education. And so the latest information is that it's definitely going to be foldable. It's going to have like a really robust hinge on the right side that lets the computer parts fold down. It's going to be more water resistant. I didn't say waterproof because I'm not 100% sure yet that it has that like IP certification that it's been waterproofed. However, I have heard from multiple sources that it will be more closed off so that it's much less likely that water or other materials that could in the workplace be much more common than on a fashion runway. It's going to be more sealed off so that those materials and water can't seep in there to damage the device. And just generally, the device is going to be it's going to have a more rugged appearance in general, and it's going to be sturdier. We know that the last device had a lot of problems with prisms foiling and breaking, and obviously we had battery problems and heat problems. Just overall, this thing is going to be more robust, and there's just going to be general improvements all the way around.
Stephen, Mike and I both have the, I guess you'd call it the consumer edition of Google Glass that we're really not
Explorer
using that much
edition,
anymore.
Yeah,
the Explorer edition, exactly. One of the issues with that one, and obviously this enterprise one will be used in a different use cases and scenarios, but one of the issues with the first Google Glass was that camera. Have you heard anything more about the camera, if this device will have one or if there'll be an option not to have one? Because some businesses, I remember, they wouldn't even allow BlackBerry devices that had cameras. That's why BlackBerry had to make camera phones and non-camera phones. So have you heard anything about that?
Right. So that's interesting. Actually, a lot of the Glass for Work startups have built their applications around the camera. That was actually in the social consumer space. It was probably one of the most controversial features, but however, in the workplace, it was actually one of the most useful features. Think being able to stream like a surgery to other doctors that are in the room, or being able to look at an inventory list in a warehouse. It was actually probably one of the device's most convincing features for the workplace. And it turns out that Google saw that, and they're actually building this device with that camera in mind. I don't have exact details on the specification of the camera, but this device we saw in its pass through the FCC is going to have added support for more Wi-Fi bands, specifically 5 gigahertz, which is not exactly all too common in consumer electronics. However, Google added that because there are a lot of Glass for Work startups who are building video streaming applications that need more robust Wi-Fi support for wireless video streaming.
Now, of course, Nest founder Tony Fadell is in charge of Google Glass now that it's becoming a real product. Is he or his group, he's the guy, by the way, who was co-founded the company that makes the Nest thermostat, very design-centric, former Apple guy. Is he or his group strongly influencing the design of this, or is this all coming from Google X? What do you know about the design of this from a sort of Stephen Hall Nest kind of perspective?
Yeah, so we do know the device has graduated out of Google X. Well, okay, Google Glass as a group has graduated out of Google X, and as a whole is under the influence, under the leadership of Tony Fadell and Ivy Ross. We do know, however, that Tony Fadell is a product guy. He was the father of the iPod and countless other like consumer electronics. And so when we saw him come on, we thought, okay, he's coming on to really prep this device in the long run to be a consumer product. And I think that's definitely a possibility. From my perspective and what I know about the device, this Enterprise Edition is actually more of a spin-off kind of the hardware we saw with the Explorer Edition, but Google's like, okay, I see this. They see this opportunity in the workplace, so they're building this hardware around it. I don't know exactly how much Tony Fadell is influencing the design of this device, as I've heard that Glass for Work startups have been receiving some kind of prototype since as far back as September of last year. So, and that was far before they brought Tony Fadell. So, I mean, I would say that Tony Fadell is obviously overseeing everything as he's now the head of the Glass Group. But I think this device is more of something that's being continually built from something that existed before he came on.
Now, we heard rumors some time ago that Luxottica, which is, I believe, the monopoly that owns all kinds of glasses brands, pretty much Sunglasses Hut and like all these sunglass brands that you've heard about, including luxury brands like Gucci, that they were working on a version of Google Glass. Now, for current glass holders, of course, Glass has its detractors, but also has people who are rabidly enthusiastic about it. For right. those people, that latter category, do you think they're going to want the Enterprise Edition, even if they're not working in a scenario that's been imagined for this device? Or will they want to wait for the consumer version that may or may not be coming from Luxottica?
Yeah, so I just reported on this a week or so ago. Google, according to what I've heard from sources, their current plan with this device is for it to have absolutely no retail or consumer availability at all. I don't know if they're going to maybe give some kind of like special privilege to those who pitched the $1,500 for the Explorer Edition or something like that for that hardcore enthusiast group of people who are crazy and use this thing on a daily basis. But I think that with this device, and this is what I said in my report, is that Google is going to distribute this only to the enterprise as of right now, and will be distributing this device through these Glass for Work startups that are building software for it. So I don't think that people are going to be able to purchase it, much less want to.
Well, your reporting on this has been really good. You've been keep hitting them out of the park around this upcoming product. Stephen Hall is at 9to5 Google, and you can follow him on Twitter at StephenHall_ at the end. Thank you, Stephen, so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, Nokia is about to break into the virtual reality racket. A Recode report says Nokia will unveil its own VR platform next week in Los Angeles. Scott Stein is a senior editor at CNET and joins us to talk about Nokia's VR. Welcome to you, Stephen. Scott. Welcome to you, Scott.
Hey, thanks.
So glad you're here. Now, how much do we know about what Nokia will announce next week? I'm guessing very little, but what do we know?
We know nothing. I mean, we really know this report. And, you know, next week is coming up fast. They're, you know, what it's going to be in Los Angeles. The report is that it's going to be coming out of Nokia Technologies, which that group that wasn't the part that, you know, went to Microsoft, released the Nokia M1 tablet earlier in the year, Android tablet in China. And what this will be, I mean, when you say VR, we mentioned virtual reality, there's a lot of different directions. Is this something that's a completely different platform? Is this a mobile device? Is this something that's going to be some sort of a enterprise level technology or software? There are a lot of directions, and the space is getting really crowded.
Scott, I would say one thing we do know is that no company is very quick to getting any type of augmented or video or virtual reality product out to market. So Oculus has been working on their Rift for several years. That's due out in the next 12 months or so. Even if Nokia has something that, you know, is a device that they want to show off, I mean, should we expect them to have a product in the very near future, or are we thinking probably a couple years away?
It's a good point. I think there's a lot of time. You know, the race is long, and this could be a couple of years away. The biggest platforms competitors that we've heard about right now aren't even hitting until 2016 at the earliest, with the exception of HTC and Valve, which say that the Vive is coming out this holiday. But the rest of the stuff we've seen right now has pretty much been prototype-type-level technology. You know, the Samsung Gear VR, which is still labeled an Innovator Edition, works really nicely, but it doesn't have that many apps. And Google Cardboard, which is more of an attempt to gain interest in the territory and market around it more than it is really a tremendously compelling platform at the moment.
Given Nokia's technology, their patents or whatever you want to call it, they're allowed to do all kinds of things, just not smartphones, according to their contract with Microsoft. But do you think that they're likely to go the HoloLens route, the sort of high-end route, or will they go the sort of Google Cardboard, low-end, use-your-own-smartphone kind of direction, again, based on the technology that they have?
I think it would be much smarter to go the more advanced route, because I think that the Google Cardboard stuff that we see out there is already getting pretty well mapped out, and it's pretty simple stuff. You know, Google Cardboard's really just a couple of lenses. You snap into your phone, works really nicely, but there's really no tech there. And a lot of companies are making little headsets that are similar. There is an interesting opportunity, not just in looking forward into the applications for virtual reality, but like you mentioned, augmented reality is going to take a long time to map out. A lot of that is going to involve sensors and chips that are going to be able to accurately map out everything realistically in the world around you. Microsoft HoloLens, and we don't know very much about Magic Leap yet, are going to be entering that space. But there will be a lot of opportunity for that, and also I think for inputs in VR. We really, beyond the headsets, we haven't seen all that much in terms of interesting ways to input with virtual reality. It does involve more than just our sight and our hearing. I think you have to think about haptics and inputs, and who knows? I mean, I think that would be an interesting area to pursue.
Well, I think there's another piece to the whole puzzle, and I'm not sure that Nokia has it, Scott. Any of these platform or any of these devices, they need a platform to run on. I mean, you've got HoloLens with Windows, you've got Google Cardboard that uses now Android or iOS at this point. What does Nokia really have in terms of platform choices? Because they don't have a platform of their own anymore. So, what do you think they might do in that regard?
I think that's a huge problem. And would it run off something like Android, or would it be its own self-contained ecosystem, which sounds very dangerous? You know, I think about other smart glasses and technologies that we've seen. Epson has one. You know, whenever you start running on those own specialized platforms, you just kind of drift off into this odd oblivion on the side. And I think that you'll have a lot of, you're already seeing a lot of in virtual reality, content developers and applications trying to get on with certain platforms, and how many platforms can really be supported. So I think that has gotten extremely crowded between Oculus, Google being in the system, and also I think you have to count in, although it will be mostly gaming, Valve and Steam. Where can Nokia go with that in terms of building its own app collection?
And we've got somebody in the chat room saying that HoloLens is not a VR headset. It's an augmented reality headset, right. And that is absolutely true. But I think that there is going to be an absolute convergence of these two. And I think that actual virtual reality will be more of an arcade type of situation, and most of it will be augmented reality. You have to have a sense of what your environment is like, or else you're going to trip over the coffee table and kill yourself. And so, I think that they're kind of merging in terms of the actual consumer products. Scott Stein, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Scott Stein is at CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at JetScott. Thank you once again, Scott, for coming on Tech News today.
Hey, thank you.
The FTC is going after LifeLock, claiming that the company failed to stick to a 2010 settlement that required the company to protect customers' user data. LifeLock, of course, is an identity theft protection service, and it doesn't do a very good job, apparently. The original settlement found that LifeLock had failed to provide, and I quote, reasonable and appropriate security to prevent unauthorized access to personal information stored on its corporate network, unquote. In other words, the data was neither encrypted nor protected by a good password system. Kevin Toefel, why does anybody use LifeLock?
I could not tell you why. I mean, I remember this debacle back in 2010, and this is just making things even worse for this company. I just don't understand it. How can you be in this business and not protect the user data? It's just good for the FTC going after them, is all I can say.
Especially when your whole business is that we're going to protect your data. That's the whole point of it. Well, we've got some follow-ups for you. We told you on July 13th that the FTC began informally investigating Apple over whether the 30% cut of streaming music subscriptions is legal under U.S. antitrust law. Now they've made it official. Sources cultivated by The Verge say the FTC has already issued subpoenas to competing music streaming services, and I imagine, Kevin Toefel, that they're going to have a few choice words about Apple's use of this 30% cut to essentially create a pickle for the competitors. Anyone who wants to be on iOS has to either pay Apple essentially almost a third of the subscription revenue, not for the app, but for the subscription that they get in the app. And then Apple, of course, doesn't let them advertise the fact that they can get it elsewhere. They can either lose money or, you know, I mean, it's just a really bad situation. And we'll see what the F do. But, well, let me ask you this. Do you have any predictions about the outcome of this investigation?
I think this will obviously be a very high profile investigation. And I think Apple's competitors will be, you know, lobbying to the FTC to say, you need to do something about this. I'm not sure anything's going to come of it. I do remember last week, Spotify was actually telling its users, hey, you know what? You don't need to subscribe through the Apple App Store. You can just go to our site and subscribe there and save the 30% quote unquote tax. So they're already trying to get their customers around this. But as far as a final judgment against Apple in this case, I don't expect one.
Yeah, it's the problem is that it's hard to see how consumers are harmed. It's easy to see how competitors are harmed, and that's not the right test in U.S. antitrust law. Well, the FCC is reportedly finalizing the review of AT&T's bid to buy DirecTV. The DOJ has already approved it, apparently, and the only remaining step is for the FCC's five commissioners to formally submit their approval. It looks like this is going to happen. We've got some product updates for you. Google announced yesterday a new Google Maps feature called Your Timeline. The feature shows on maps everywhere you've been, plus geotagged pictures from Google Photos flagged on the map at the locations where you took them. Your location and photos are visible only to you. The feature will be rolling out gradually to the desktop browser version of Maps and also the Android version. This is pretty cool, Kevin Toefel. I was disappointed when they killed Latitude. Hardly anybody used Latitude, but I thought it was pretty great. And so it looks like they're bringing some of that functionality into Maps. This is also something that this information has been available in there. What do they call that, Kevin? The site where you can go and see all the stuff that Google knows about you?
Oh, it's your Google account dashboard, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Where they all have been showing you for a long time everywhere you've been, but that's kind of an out-of-the-way place that people don't normally go to.
Yeah, this is going to give fodder to the crowd that says Google is creepy. But even though you can opt out of this, you don't need to share this data or anything like that. But I could see the backlash coming already on this one.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because it's really the opposite of creepy in my view. Lots of companies gather all your location and they never tell you about it. And everybody's just happy as can be about that. Google is transparent about what it knows about you. And then this is a brilliant case where it's taking saying, look, click on this thing and we'll show you all the location data we have on you. There it is. If you don't like it, here's how to go and turn it off or whatever. So I think the public in general is more of an out of sight, out of mind kind of takes an out of sight, out of mind approach to being outraged about privacy. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, BlackBerry said today that they're buying a privately held company called AdHoc, which makes secure network crisis communication software. AdHoc is based in Silicon Valley, and they have customers like U.S. Department of Defense, you might have heard of them, the Department of Homeland Security, also a bunch of major corporations. AdHoc software, which enables people to reach coworkers by smartphone, radios, and even sirens, is expected to be integrated somehow into BlackBerry Messenger. Terms are not disclosed. Kevin Toefel, BlackBerry Messenger is going to support sirens.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some people are happy about that. I don't particularly care about it, but I'm not a field worker or work for the government. I think this is a good play by BlackBerry because it plays to their strengths. I mean, this is, you know, secure communication is, you know, the backbone of BlackBerry's services, and the government still uses BlackBerrys. There are a lot of agencies that still do. And, you know, crisis communications, I think it's brilliant.
I do, too. I totally agree with you. BlackBerry's big strong suit is to mark themselves out as the security company. And if they do that, I think they're going to have a much easier time of it going forward. Well, Google announced yesterday that it has acquired a mobile app prototyping tool company called Pix8. The application won't be shut down, according to the companies. If you are using Pix8, you can continue to use it as Pix8. The terms of this one were not disclosed either. I'm not familiar with this, Kevin Toefel, but it looks like a good move by Google.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it either. I'm wondering if you can like prototype things for 3D printing and such. I don't know specifically what it is used for, but yeah, if any big company is going to buy them, I could see Google being the one.
Yeah, and I'd love to see it. Well, we got some more news coming right up, but first let's talk about food. Let's talk about Blue Apron, one of our sponsors today. You know, we all love to eat, And you basically got a choice whenever you want to have dinner. You can go to a restaurant where you can spend a fortune and have a super high-calorie meal in most cases, spend a lot of time, and essentially, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to restaurants. For the most part, it's not a good idea to eat at restaurants often. Or the other option is for you to cook your own food. But lots of people aren't that good at cooking, or it's, you know, difficult to make sure you have all the ingredients involved. Blue Apron solves all of this. They let you cook your own dinner, and they'll give you exactly the ingredients you need and tell you exactly how to prepare it, usually in about 30 minutes. And each meal is about 500 to 700 calories, even though they're very filling meals, they're very satisfying comfort food type of meals. They're very low in calories and very healthy because they're sending you fresh ingredients. They'll send you carrots, potatoes, as much of the food is absolutely fresh as possibly can be. Sometimes they'll send you canned things, like if it's a Pacific type of meal from Asia, they may send you coconut milk or something like that in a can. But other than that, it's super fresh stuff. Really great, and they can even work around your schedule and dietary preferences. They have experts that source only the best seasonal ingredients for incredible meals like crispy curried zucchini rounds or summer bean and mushroom pasta with crispy shallot rings. Every single Blue Apron meal that I've prepared was fantastic, and I end up feeling like some kind of super chef because the way the meals look, it's better than restaurant quality food, and you just can't believe that you did it yourself. At least I couldn't. So you got to check out Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's right, two meals free just for going to blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today and also for all the great food. Well, in courtroom drama news, Herbalife is trying to use the courts to go after a Twitter user. The company filed a petition to force Twitter to hand over an anonymous user's IP addresses and account details. The user slammed Herbalife as a pack of thieves, pill-pushing frauds, and bullies. This user has 90 followers. I don't know what they're getting so upset about. This is pretty much what Twitter is all about.
Yeah, I wouldn't be that upset if I was Herbalife, considering there's only 90 followers there. And, you know, today's day and age, social media, people are going to say what they think about a company or a service. I did this last night with Verizon Fios. I was having some problems and I wasn't happy. And it turned out to be a good situation because it resolved the problem quicker. But I see what Herbalife's concerned about is, you know, bad publicity, but 90 followers and they're going to make a big to-do about this?
Yeah, they're going to have a lot more than 90 by the time this all gets out into the press and by the time this show gets downloaded. It's going to be another Streisand effect type situation. Well, we got another earnings report for you. Microsoft also had an earnings call yesterday and beat expectations. The company had a so-so quarter, which was made to look much worse by the company's $7.6 billion write-down of Nokia. On paper, the company lost $3.2 billion for the quarter, which just doesn't look good. The company made $22.2 billion in revenue, driven by Office 365, Azure, and Dynamics CRM Online. Xbox and Surface hardware brought the company another $2 billion. That's pretty good for a software company. The company was hammered once again by declining PC sales. What are the prospects, Kevin Toefel, for Microsoft? Are they going to be able to reinvent themselves and retain their leadership position, or are they just going to decline into oblivion?
Well, I think they're in the process of reinventing themselves ever since the CEO changed to Satya Nadella. They've made various strategic decisions and cuts of products and services, and they're focusing on a cross-platform software and services, you know, mobile-first, cloud-first approach, as he says. Xbox is still doing well. Surface is actually doing well, and I use a Surface Pro 3 from time to time. It's a very nice device. Interestingly, they made $888 million on Surface sales, and we just heard earlier in the show that Apple likely made about almost $1 billion on Apple Watch sales. Surface is doing well, but Apple Watch is a flop somehow, so that's kind of an interesting contrast. But I think Microsoft's doing all it can do at this point. It cannot catch up to the other players, the dominant mobile players, by doing the same old with Windows Phone, Windows Mobile, whatever it's called these days. So I think there's still hope yet.
We also reached another milestone that's really interesting. iOS device sales have finally outpaced Windows PC sales for the first time. Yeah, that's right. So iPhones and iPads, and I guess iPod touches, collectively are now selling more than Windows PCs. So we are definitely in a post-PC era here. And that is an astonishing thing that I don't think anybody was predicting. Well, in news, you can use a new Chrome extension called Dmail. Lets you turn your regular Gmail into an app that can send self-destructing ephemeral emails. Or you can revoke emails after you've sent them. The recipient can use any email client, but I believe they have to use the Chrome browser in order to use this. This looks pretty cool. I've been trying it out. It actually works fine. Well, in news you can lose, the clothing retailer Forever 21 has I get all my clothes at Forever 41, has embraced a thread-based display technology in a publicity stunt. And by thread, I mean, you know, string that you make clothes with. The display was created by a New York-based hardware prototyping company called Breakfast. They built it using 6,400 custom-built spools of thread, 6.7 miles of actual thread, 600 pounds of milled aluminum, and a total of 200,000 parts, which spin the spools of thread to get the right color. Each spool serves as a pixel. The colors are authenticated in real time with infrared scanning. The 80 by 80 display, no, it's not super high res, shows Instagram photos, and if you want your picture to show up on the thread screen, just post it on Instagram and use the hashtag F21 thread screen. Let's take a look at their video. Oh, it's a dead pixel. Yeah, Burke mentioned that it has a very slow refresh rate.
This makes the Kindle look good.
Yeah. That's amazing. What a colossal waste of time or something. But, you know, it's a publicity stunt. So as far as those things go, I guess it paid off. We're talking about it. We're giving them publicity. Go shop at Forever 21. They have spool-based displays. Wow, incredible. Well, we got some email from a TNT fan named Bill Dom, who said the following. He said, on a recent program, you were wondering why someone would buy an iPod Touch, which is basically an iPhone without the phone, instead of a less expensive and fully functional Android smartphone. The answer, as the article suggests, he sent an article along, is that it's aimed at kids and parents who don't want yet another cell phone bill to pay every month. In fact, there are people like Alex Lindsay, who said just this week on MacBreak Weekly that when he does answer the phone, the first thing he asks is, why did you call me? That's a good point. I think at some point we're very close to a world in which a phone call is just another app. And why would you need anything except data? The only problem is that sometimes you don't actually have access to that data. If you've got a comment on any of our stories, just send email to tnt@twit.tv, and we'd love to read them on the air. We can't read them all, but we'll read some of them, so go ahead and send those in. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Bill Thomas in Macungie, Pennsylvania, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he watches Tech News Today while sitting on the porch and enjoying the summer breeze. That doesn't even look real, Kevin Toefel. That looks like a simulacrum of a beautiful window and a porch.
Oh, I know it's real because that town is only about a half an hour away from me. I know exactly where it is.
Unbelievable. Beautiful. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more refreshing than a summer breeze and Tech News Today. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your porch and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Kevin Toefel, what are you working on for ZDNet right now? What's going on your neck of the woods?
Well, now that Apple earnings are done, I'm going to turn my attention to putting out a review of this MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook, and the one port that it has. I've been using it for the past week. I think it's great if you're a writer. I think if you need high horsepower, this is not the machine for you.
Everything is great if you're a writer. I mean, an iPad is great if you're a writer. All you need is a keyboard, basically, and a screen. Mm-hmm. How are you finding that single port? Is that a problem? Do you have an extender of some kind, or are you just trying to get by with a single port?
Yeah, I'm fine with a single port most times. I mean, because I'm powering the device and with that port. but I do have an adapter from the Chromebook Pixel 2 that I'm using right now, in fact, to connect this device to a hub where I have multiple ports. So it's fine. I you know, as long as I don't run out of battery, I could keep doing the show for another 7-8 hours because that's
it.
Your charging port. Yeah, let's go for it. Works great as a for external displays. I have a UHD monitor behind me or behind the device. I connect to that. But again, yeah, you're limited unless you want to carry around a little hub with you. So it's,
yeah. This is one of those things where everybody slams Apple for doing it. In a couple of years, it'll all be very standard and nobody will remember why we disagreed with it. Kevin Toefel is at Kevin C. Toefel on Twitter, and you can follow all his work there and also find him on ZDNet. Kevin, thank you so much for co-anchoring today, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today by going to twit.tv/TNT and clicking on either the subscribe to audio or subscribe to video button. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, here's how you do it. Just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on the social media site of your choice, tag 3 friends, and recommend that they subscribe. You can also join our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and find us in the community section. You can follow me at Elgin.com. And also, don't miss our other news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. That is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.